Welcome back to the Two Word Review Podcast, where a movie is worth two words. No, freak, man. Where a picture is worth a thousand words.
Keep it this much day.
Is worth a thousand words, but a movie is worth two. Obviously, we're a little rusty because it's been a few weeks, and I think we just need to be honest with everyone about why we haven't been able to record for the last few weeks.
Yeah, well, it's just been a constant battle in Southern California. I mean, if we're speaking about honesty, that's really what's been happening. The plot has only gotten more and more complicated. Oh, goodness.
It's all flubberbutt again.
It's so brutal.
I mean, like, we're trying not to make this joke, like, but we really need to not make this joke. Because, so Matt was talking with some executives, and after they granted us the funding for a full season, you know, the very next episode, we got back into old habits, and the last few weeks have just been an absolute mess. But we're back on track. This is episode 6, A Complete Idea.
We finally have an idea.
And, you know, in the podcasting world, episode 6 represents something special. It represents, you know, you made it off the ground, because statistics say that most podcasts do not make it to 6, and that if you do make it to 6, you're in for at least a stream of episodes following. So, I mean, we've proven, despite, you know, like the Wright brothers having a difficulty getting their plane off the ground, we've proven that we're committed to the aircraft.
We're committed. Absolutely. To the aircraft.
Could not have said it better myself. But luckily, Matt has given us funds again, our producer, Matt, in case you forgot. But we're finally at episode 6, and today we're going to be talking about the number one rated movie on IMDb, The Shawshank Redemption.
So let's talk about movie ratings for a moment. What does number one rated on IMDb mean to us?
That's a good question.
It means better than Metascore. That's what it means.
What does that mean? What does I don't know, that tone and right now, great visuals for the audience to hear. Jake's got a flower in his he's on Snapcam and got a wonderful flower in his ear. And I'm having a hard time taking his critical reception seriously, given the fact that he has Snapcam on his computer. But
I just so happen to know you also have Snapcam on your computer. So
it is, but it's not active. You know, it's not active. When I'm at work, I'm at work, Jake.
You see, it was out of sheer laziness. Snapcam was already set up. I just went for it.
Okay, but Metacritic, what is this shade you're throwing?
It's because Metacritic is just everybody trying to flex on each other. It's really annoying and it's really stupid. I use Metascores as like a general maybe yardstick. That's what I use it as. It's like, oh, it has a green Metascore. It might be good. That's what I see, because I've had too many movies where it was like really not that great and it got like a freaking 70, you know, it was green. And so what I do now is I go, okay, if it's got a green Metascore, I'll give it a chance. But if it's yellow or red, it doesn't mean it's going to be bad.
So what's the highest tier of online movie reviews?
Probably IMDb user or Rotten Tomatoes percentage.
Well, that's interesting, Rotten Tomatoes. See, my thing with Rotten Tomatoes is the percentage is misleading, because it's not like this movie is 97% good. It's like 97% of people gave it a positive review or not.
See,
which can mean that it's like barely positive or like barely negative. So there are some rotten movies that I like and there's some positive movies that I'm just like,
unfortunately, the truth is, or that is also the case with IMDb user though. Cause if there's not that many users, it can be a way higher number than it would if it had more.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. I think they take into account how many people have rated it, because with, you know, the top, you know, 100 or whatever, it's not going to have like some short film that one dude made and is super obscure and he is the only guy who rated it himself and he gave it a 10. And so it just rises to number one on IMDb.
Well, yeah, that's true. But like, okay, prime example right here. That movie we just watched a few weekends ago called Weird.
Yeah, We Are Still Here. I just, okay. Yeah.
That has a green Metascore. That has a green Metascore, and it had like a 90 or 80 something percent in Rotten Tomatoes. So I guess it's not always reliable, but I think it's better. Like, I trust user reviews on IMDb versus, like, I trust user reviews way more than Metascore. That was really the crux of my point.
Oh, so you're talking user reviews on Rotten Tomatoes?
Well, that becomes...
Or the critic reviews. Right? Well, no, because they have two separate... Like, I still like Rotten Tomatoes. I'll use it. I kind of take it with a grain of salt because I don't let it affect whether or not I'm going to watch something. But, for example, like, they have two scores. They have the tomato, and then they have, like, the popcorn. And the popcorn is user, and the tomato is critics.
Yeah, I was being very unclear. I usually go off the popcorn percentage.
Okay, yeah. And it's still interesting, if nothing else, to see what other people are thinking of these movies. But I definitely like IMDb user ratings as well. I think it makes more sense to see what just the common folk think of these movies.
Yeah, I do think that my number one, even over Rotten Tomatoes user percentage, is IMDb user. I don't always trust it. I don't always believe it, but on average, it's like the most accurate, in my opinion.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a struggle because, I want to say that I don't know. I low key have this whole theology that I carry around with me that I literally don't even see value aside from, don't get me wrong, there's monetary value to tracking what's trending, what's popular, what people are engaged with. But personally, I would like to at least experience an environment where everything is treated completely the same. And there would be tons of garbage. But like, I can't help but think that, you know, the original days of YouTube, when YouTube was being discovered and it wasn't quite what it is now, that's as close to that kind of an environment that I think I've ever been, and I loved it. There was tons of trash content, but it was okay because it made the experience of discovering good stuff like way more rewarding and satisfying. So I don't know. You can't completely trust the general public because they bias each other in interesting ways, but you can't trust critics either. So it's like, it's a mess.
I really agree with Aaron's point. I kind of stand that way, like with criticism in general. I think that some people overdo it, like they over invest in other people's opinions. So my thing about this is, for me specifically with movie reviews, it kind of goes one way. It doesn't go two ways. It goes, if it's a high reviewed movie, I will probably give it a chance. If it's not a high reviewed movie, it doesn't mean I won't give it a chance. It only goes up, because my thing is like, just as somebody who like constantly is trying to find, for example, we always watch horror movies. So I'm always looking for horror movies to watch. And if I didn't have user reviews, like, we would hit more stinkers than we do right now. That's the thing, is you'll hit less stinkers if you just let it go one way. But it doesn't necessarily mean you say, oh, if it's below 5 or whatever, I'm not going to watch it. It just means if it's below 5, it has higher risk of being a stinker. That's how I view it.
And we've watched some stinkers that were green.
Yep, exactly. And that, like, that it's not always trusted.
Yeah, it's a risky world.
It's way more, it's fun to watch those types of movies with other people because there's still the entertainment value, but just from doing like a Mystery Science Theater thing where you just,
yeah, I mean that's the other thing, is it's like, what as a viewer, I don't think most people, and I'm not blaming anybody, I don't always even take the time to think about why a movie intrigued me. It's like, did it stroke your ego? Did it make you feel intellectual, or was it just entertainment? And I don't know. I think it actually is pretty hard to establish quote, just entertainment. But the point is, if you laughed or if you engaged in any way with the movie, it probably succeeded at doing something.
Yeah, definitely at something.
Yeah, like that movie, that We Are Still Here, that movie absolutely sucks.
Yeah, but, so bad. Honestly, one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Same, but it honestly was so fun to watch together.
Yeah, exactly. I would have hated watching it alone, though.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been so bogus. I would have turned it off.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a whole nother conversation. We're going to have to save that one, though. But at what point you turn the movie off, that's a good conversation. But
yeah, we better get into Shawshank. Yes. At the end of the day, you should formulate your own opinions, not based on the opinions of others, is what we're trying to say, basically.
Yep.
Other people's opinions can be interesting for searching out stuff, but at the end of the day, you got to consume it yourself and then come to your own conclusion.
Yep.
And with that, Shawshank. So I will start off with my two-word review. And I said that it was hopeful and gratifying.
That's nice.
So there are my two words.
Okay, mine are, I also was going to use hopeful, so I'm trying to figure out if I should.
We could have a repeat of...
mine's fire, let me just say it.
All right, go ahead, okay. Do yours.
Potent... and inspired.
That is good. I would say, I was going to say hopeful and engaging, but
you could say hopey.
You could say hopey.
Hopey and engaging.
Full of hopiness.
Oh,
yeah, no, that's a good, that's good.
I think
it's no potent. Potent's a beautiful word.
Potent is a beautiful word. That's a good one.
But it's an incredibly vague word.
Yeah, dude, but true.
There's scenes in this movie that are potent.
Oh yeah.
To the old potent. It's like sticking a needle right in your heart and injecting.
But here,
you know, something. An inspired message.
Now here's
either a medication or a poison. There are some very okay, polar ends of this movie.
The problem is, lest we forget that you could also use the word potent to describe We Are Still Here.
But that's I did potent and inspired. So it's sharp. This movie is not just like hopeful in your classic based on a true story kind of way. This isn't even based on a true story. But it's aggressively hopeful.
It's aggressively hopeful.
This is not classic hopey.
No.
Hey, my word's hopey.
I was just calling back to the classic funding conversation we had last time.
Classic hopey.
Oh, I'm afraid dissertations on the English language is an essential part of this podcast. As a matter of fact, that was that whole tangent we took was actually what ended up saving the show with the executives. They thought that whole idea of dissecting the English language was an intriguing concept.
They liked the reviewing part of it and the movie stuff, but they love the educational value that it's bringing to the youth of America.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, PBS just isn't delivering what it used to. And so
exactly.
The TWR podcast is... It's borderline government sponsored. Like, given enough time, we might be getting some high profile sponsors.
We'll get there.
Okay, no, but about Shawshank, I gotta say, like, I was incredibly surprised when I found out that Stephen King was an author for this movie.
Yeah,
that blew my mind. Because I have seen tons of Stephen King's movies, and I didn't know that Shawshank was Stephen King until like 6 months ago, probably. And it blew my mind.
Did you know it as you were watching it?
Yeah, I did. I knew it as I was watching it, but I learned like a couple weeks before we watched it. But man, it kind of makes sense, especially if you watch The Green Mile. The Green Mile is way more Stephen King-y, but it does make sense. Like, you can kind of tell
It does. Like, he has themes and ideas that he always brings into his writings. Like, he's definitely got a distant infatuation with, like, Christian values, and he'll always, in all of his stories, there is always the religious perspective, the government perspective, and then the average person perspective. He always does small town people. And that's all happening in this movie as well. It's just not, there's nothing supernatural.
Yeah.
He also really likes to bring in a character and then kill them.
Yep. And that's that's part of what makes Stephen King so cool sometimes, is he's willing to just kill people.
Yeah.
You know,
that's in general, that is what I like about Stephen King, though, is it's like his characters don't represent a person. They represent a demographic of people in society. And he does that frequently, almost all of his stories.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, I rewatched this a couple weeks ago, and it had been a few years since I watched it, but it was it was just as good as I remembered. It was really cool rewatching it and kind of just trying to pick up on all the little details. With just, I don't know, it's long, but it delivers the goods. It really keeps you engaged, very interesting. Very interested in the main character, and it just keeps you, I guess I can't think of a better word than engaged in this context.
Curious, that was one of my words.
Yeah, sorry, maybe I just said hopey and engaging, but it was really good. It was, it was hopeful in that, the guy is wrongfully convicted and he just doesn't like try and refute it, even though he knows it's wrong. He just kind of grinds through his prison sentence, but there's always like his ulterior underworkings going. He's not just like some guy's like, okay, whatever, I give up, this is my life and it's crap now because of something someone else did. But he like continues, and I like about this movie because that he could have taken it, or the story it's based on, he could have taken the route of the guy that actually did it, the person who was actually guilty, that could have been a way bigger part of the plot, but it's not. It's not like, oh, wow, he was indicted and everything was perfect. It's like he has to figure out the situation for himself. Obviously there's some possibilities that come in and out, but at the end of the day, it's his own kind of struggle that he has to overcome through just his own.
Well, I like the whole concept of like, basically play the hand you're dealt, and he immediately just takes great intrigue in the people he's surrounded by.
Yeah.
And that's something that you in real life, you can do wherever you end up. As a matter of fact, I think the sooner you do really embrace the people around you instead of aspiring for other people, you do find a sense of, I don't know, fulfillment for sure. The way that this character kind of goes through that, he legitimately connects to these inmates. It's cool.
Yeah. No, I think like the character development in this is like amazing. Honestly, like Morgan Freeman in this movie is apparently a convicted murderer, but like, man, you just like feel safe when he's on screen.
I know.
Like, he's just a strong, warm character. Like, you really like him a lot. And I don't know. I just think that they hit some very deep points, like the whole the old man that works in the library that gets released, and then he can't handle normal life again, and how Morgan Freeman's whole like little discourse on, he just like the four walls of the prison were his home. You know, he was just so used to it. Like, there's just a lot of really interesting, deep thinking things that they hit on in this movie. It's really, really.
Yeah. I love the Morgan Freeman narration. Of course, you can't have a Morgan Freeman movie without him narrating it. But I liked it in this. Sometimes it can be a little ham-fisted. It's like, oh, we have Morgan Freeman, that means he has to narrate or have some sort of internal dialogue. But I like the way they did it in this. I thought it worked really well. And well,
the other thing is, this is, I mean, not obviously Morgan Freeman's first movie, but this was a while ago.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I think a key, yeah, going back, kind of like a key, if you're going to bring in deep, This is something that I'm going to just argue seems to be missing from modern film in general, in my opinion. If you're going to bring in deep themes and really try and kind of like not even necessarily teach, but just be thought-provoking with your audience, you have to do it in a way that doesn't feel like you're forcing an agenda or being super preachy. And I think that this movie accomplishes that. It naturally makes you think about things without in like forcing you to think about or feeling like you're under direct manipulation of what they're trying to get you at. They leave certain things open-ended, and they're establishing these points and making you think in a way that's pretty open-ended. And I generally like when directors are good at that. I hate it when they almost break the fourth wall and then just start look at the camera and start telling you things to think. It's like, bro. Yeah,
Jordan Peele.
It's way more potent when it's subtle and like, I don't know. Yeah, I think it works really well because it's like, it's showing you things as they could be and probably are, but it's not like, hey, look. It's not like Morgan Freeman doesn't just like look at the camera. The narration isn't just like, wow, look how crappy it is to be in prison if you're not guilty. Like, look at how crappy. Like, it's very, I like what you're saying, Aaron, about that. It just works well the way that they present it. And it's going to connect more when it's more of like the internal theme that you kind of have to look for. It's not just immediately placed on a silver platter. It's like, we don't trust our audience, so here's all this unnecessary exhibition and dialogue and to just really make sure that you understand what's happening and what we want to tell you and everything. Because that, like, obviously film is a medium by which you can convey messages, but the message can be lost if you're just outright saying the message.
Yeah, it's almost like the viewer, I mean, it just means, in general, they've proven with learning techniques. I know a little bit about that actually in the context of computers and machine learning. But like, if the viewer can basically not just have something recited to them, but then they almost teach themselves. So you're trying to create an environment where whether the director was trying to direct you towards a certain conclusion or not, the viewer feels like they reached that conclusion of their own thinking. And I think this movie does that well. It allows you to reach your own conclusion, which may or may not match, and it doesn't even really matter, I don't think, what the director was trying to say. And so, yeah, encouraging thought of the viewer instead of taking thought away from the viewer. I think that's something that's really Absolutely. Refreshing about this movie and this director in general. I've gone through with my family most of his movies, and I really like his movies.
Because he also made Green Mile, right?
Yeah. And The Majestic. Well. The Majestic, I think it's called, with Jim Carrey. It's also really good.
Yeah, it is good.
And he did The Mist, which is a Stephen King. Anyway, yeah, he's good.
They must be pals.
Yeah.
Stephen King, him. Yeah, it was a good one.
I really like this movie.
Likewise. I don't know that it's like, because it's been at the top of IMDb for a long time, and I don't really know that it ever will get dethroned. I don't know really what could dethrone it.
Avatar 2.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
My prediction is Avatar 2, if it even freaking happens, is going to be a big letdown. I think it's going to get kind of destroyed.
There's no way it's not going to be a letdown. At this point, everyone is expecting it to be a letdown.
If James Cameron's name is on it, I don't think the world can let it be a letdown. If we lose James Cameron, what do we have left in this post-apocalyptic 2020 world?
Well, I don't even know that it comes out until 2022 or something. I think they pushed it back again.
Oh goodness!
It's just so far out. And the original came out in 2009. Like, the thing is, there's no Avatar fan base either. No one like has an Avatar poster or shirt after like 2012 because it was just kind of forgotten.
I think people were just really impressed with the special effects, and that was about it.
Absolutely. I was blown away. I mean, granted, I was like 10 years old when it came out.
Yeah.
But I was blown away by the CGI.
No, you guys are wrong. Avatar lives in all of us. We don't have to wear it on a shirt. It's deeper than that. It's inside of every one of us.
Yeah, with the unobtainium. What a deep message of a material being unobtainable.
Oh boy. $1 billion unobtainium.
Oh yeah. They're gonna harvest that planet. Anyway, you wanna move on to the speed round or whatever?
Yeah, let's do some associations.
Yes. I will do Aaron.
Oh boy. This is always such a bold feat of after such high-minded thoughts, we get reduced down to be the children we truly are.
Yeah. We are again reduced to nubs.
9 out of 10, you're gonna say the word and Aaron's gonna be like, chicken run.
Water.
Titanic.
Oh, nice.
James Cameron. That's why.
Sticking in your mind.
Yeah. And the first word that comes to mind is butt. But we're going to have to. We got to watch that.
How does water become butt? Because of the translucent.
Titanic, bro. Titanic just has those epic cushions. Yeah. The very edges of what PG-13 means to the modern world.
Yep.
Okay, let's go. Let's see. I'm going to say tragic and forced. The film is very forced, but it is a tragedy, of course. But that is a forced. That film is.
Sound a little bit.
How dare you slander Titanic?
Let's hear your explanation of why it's forced.
Well, I mean, just take the icon. I don't know. I think romanticizing tragedy is just a tendency of Hollywood. And maybe it's because we understand, us common folk, we understand romantic trauma. But like, I don't know if that was that whole storyline to tell us the story of Titanic through, you know, a romantic relationship has impact, but is it the impact that Titanic truly carries? I don't know. He definitely told us the story of a tragedy, and Titanic was a tragedy. So there you go.
Yeah.
Interesting point.
Okay. I'm going to feed Jake those dank words.
All right, let's do it.
You ready? This is gonna be difficult, maybe.
I will not say Chicken Run.
Straw.
The founder. Went straight to the founder because straw meant McDonald's cup, and then McDonald's cup meant Ray Kroc.
Straw meant the golden arches? Oh boy.
I was thinking straw like hay.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Yeah, I was thinking the farmer world, but you.
I went straight to Ray Kroc, baby. I don't know.
Jake is one of them civilized folk with McDonald's.
he knows what a straw truly is.
Well,
we out here in our hay bales.
No, but The Founder is actually like a really good movie. It's actually like really good. It's pretty sad because you learn about, you know, how Ray Kroc basically screwed the McDonald brothers over pretty bad. But at the same time, even though I don't personally view Ray Kroc as a super great person, he also was very talented person. Like being able to take such something so small and make it as big as he did, like, it's pretty impressive. I mean, I don't want to just be a hater, but I do think that the movie, for a two-word review, I would say sad and interesting. It's probably what
it is. Yeah, that's a good one, actually. That's very, very apt for that movie.
Yeah.
That was a good movie. I liked it.
Yeah, it was good.
Our boy Michael Keaton just getting wealthy with the other boys.
Yeah, Michael Keaton.
Just getting wealthy.
Just getting that thick coin.
Hey, at least he kept it McDonald's, right? because they've made so much money off of their own name.
Yeah, that's true. At least he kept it McDonald's, at the very least.
No, I don't think they've actually made money off that name. I mean, yeah, I'm no, sure they sued.
At least their names are still on it.
No, I think he eventually in that movie, I think it crosses that bridge. He buys it outright from him.
Oh, yeah. He does?
It's honestly pretty heart-wrenching. But the problem, the moral question of that movie is the McDonald's brothers themselves, though they came up with the idea and they were ballers and they were awesome, they wouldn't have been able to make it bigger than it was.
Yeah, than their own little shop.
And the point is that they didn't want to.
Yeah.
They it's just a classic story of you don't know what you actually want, because they thought they did. They thought they wanted to expand that idea. But then when it actually expanded, they totally had cold feet.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, and that's a hard one to know, because it would have just been really hard. I mean, the whole concept of fast food just didn't even really exist at that time. And so
that's what's crazy is when they eventually when they cross that bridge and they take their original restaurant from them.
I know.
Yeah. You know, I it's hard. I like interesting as a word because it is complicated. Like, I think the McDonald's brothers are more relatable because they're more human to me than Ray Kroc was. But at the same time, both of them were doing what they were out to do, and it's interesting.
Yeah. That's why I don't necessarily want to say I think Ray Kroc is like a super bad person, but I think that
he was pretty amoral.
He doesn't align with my values, but
I personally wouldn't do it. But what I'm saying is, like, it's hard to explain. I don't really
if money is the metric of success in your life, he was doing absolutely. I mean, he was Chad.
But not even just that. Not even just money. It's the fact that he was able to take that idea and make it so universal. Like, that is a very hard thing to do.
It's true. No, it I'm not. I hear you. Like, I can't just completely say there is no value to what he was doing, because most people cannot do what he did. Mm-hmm. But what he applied it to.
Yeah, the way that he got around to do that.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a fair point.
A little sus, but
well, it was more than
sus. Who? Yeah, it's big sus. But it's like, who hasn't eaten fast food? So.
Yep.
It's all just, right. That's a whole other interesting conversation of just harvesting the weak, and then just eventually someone else profits off of it and benefits.
Yeah,
because like I've benefited from fast food. I like it. It's a nice.
Well, it's hard to not apply that concept to more than just food, because like Hollywood is also.
Oh yeah, harvesting the wheat. Not just food, just yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
The internet is harvesting the wheat.
We are the crop. We are the true straws of the internet, and we are being harvested daily.
We're the straws.
Okay, but here's the thing: is yes, harvesting the wheat is a bad thing in some ways, but there does have to be something said about the weak sometimes can't bring ideas to come to pass, and they actually need to be harvested in order for that idea to be universal.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
And yeah, that's kind of the moral dilemma of like the whole founder and just that whole idea of making something, an idea like that, so universal. Because people are just going to get trampled and there's no way around it.
Well, and it's hard too, because like that goes back to our point with the critics too. Like, what is the value of universality in certain contexts? There's some things that I would say it's good to be, you know, on the same page, but like some things you destroy the beauty that was original YouTube to replace it only with.
I think
YouTube is a good enough example, especially just because of the absolute crap hole that it's become. Like, I honestly almost never go on YouTube anymore unless it's to watch something. It's not ever to watch like, oh, I really like this guy who exclusively posts on YouTube. It's almost always to just watch an educational video or a video of something else.
I think that this is a really interesting point, actually. I could go on for a long time, but I have just one small point about it. I think that in regards to when something should be like universalized is it should be the things that are as general as possible, literally as general as possible. Because, like, for example, the development and production of the movie camera. Okay. I guarantee that started out as a simple idea. I'm sure that in many degrees, people were trampled with, you know, ideas. Oh, this works better. And then somebody with more money produced it. But the whole point about it is now we have the movie camera, which can convey so much now. So in my opinion, though, that there were probably many people trampled, it was worth it.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, I am definitely morally against, you know, the things that Ray Kroc did to the McDonald's brothers or whatever else happens along the way. But at the end of the day, like, I and everyone else who is against those, like, just people getting wrecked, I'm still benefiting from how it, I'm not going to be like, oh yeah, I'm just going to not use this thing just because of the way that it came to pass. I mean, maybe in certain aspects, but it's almost impossible to be like that, because there's just still basically everything we consume in some way or another, whether it be Walmart, movies, you know, fast food, everything, somewhere along the way, people were getting absolutely destroyed. I'm not saying that's a good thing, but it's just the way that our society is. And if you want to function in it and, you know, take advantage of, you know, what we have now, then it's like, there's obviously going to be the underlying part of everything like this. And so it's just kind of,
yeah.
Yep.
No,
it's a dilemma that's just constantly going, but at the end of the day, I'm still going to shop at Walmart because I'm poor and I like cheap things.
Like unto Avatar. I experienced like time I spent in South Korea. They don't have formal franchises for food, so opening a restaurant is actually a completely viable career option. And food is really cool over there because on every block there is somebody doing something that isn't happening at the next block. And because there's so many restaurants, it actually still keeps the price down. So there's so many, like, I'm not out to say one way is better than the other. I will say that, like, people like Ray Kroc, getting that many people to come down to us to agree on a common solution, that is hard to do. And those are the people I think you got to watch. I think that's the point of the movie, like you say, is to watch those types of people like a hawk. But I can't say that there's no value to it either. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, Ray Kroc and straws. What a that
what
is
a connection. What a tangent.
What an interesting conversation, though. That's what films out to get us
yeah,
common
really.
Folk. Us
and that's
weak.
The thing is, like, I don't know. That's a huge part of why I love movies, and that's the medium by which I'm able to connect with the most, is because you're able to convey so much more, or at least incite a lot more conversation than what is presented to you on screen. There's so much that you're able to kind of delve into that can be beneficial or at least interesting and engaging for people to, you know, converse about. And so that's been a good outlet through film as well.
Yeah. See, and that's what makes it better than that. That's again, part of why I have issues with like just good, bad, 5-star ratings is because
yeah.
That the conversation should not be boiled down to good, bad. It's like what we just did here, you know, a more elaborate conversation about what it brought out, I think. Because most film, like I was saying, if it engages you in any way, even in the atrocity that it is, it created an engagement, and that's where the value comes, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
For sure. Lucas,
here comes your word. Camera.
Super 8.
Me too.
Yep. Makes sense.
Yeah. Actually only ever seen that movie once, and I liked it at the time that I saw it. I don't know how I'd feel about it if I rewatched it, but at the time I really liked it, actually. I was kind of younger. I was about the same age as the kids in that movie, and so I thought it was super fun and good.
Stranger Things for the original
honestly. 80s
throwback hipster.
Yeah, it was good. So let's see. I would say, man, this is also J.J. Abrams, which overall I like J.J. Abrams stuff, but he can be a bit contrived. Let's see. I don't know enough like unique adjectives to describe this movie just because it's been so long. And
the educational, we got to maintain educational content.
Do not show the cards in your hand, man. Don't dank
vocabulary.
The dank vocabulary continues. Okay. Okay. Let's say youthy and spookful.
You literally swapped their suffixes, dude. You literally
perfect. Yeah, no, that's pretty good though. It's youthy of another generation.
It's like nostalgic youthy.
Yeah, it's another breed of youthy.
Yeah, it's a whole other breed.
Still good.
It's a breed of youthy.
It's a breed of youthy. Like, think youthy, but then think a whole different breed.
Yeah.
Yeah, just think of what your idea of youthy is and then just transform it. Just evolve it into something completely different.
Run a few generation simulations on it.
Yeah.
But you know what?
Make your breed of youthy have a few children and grandchildren.
I agree with that, though. I think that youthy and spookful is pretty good for that movie. Oh, by the way, another youthy and spookful movie is Summer of 84, if you haven't seen it. That's pretty good.
It was good, yeah. It actually was.
I've not seen that. Yeah, I need to watch.
It was another breed of youthy, though. The same breed as Super 8.
Yep.
But it's a different breed than Hot Rod.
An entirely different breed than the anomaly we know as TikTok.
Oh, yeah, that's a whole other tangent that I will not go on this time, but maybe another time.
We should do, at the end of the season, we should do a special where we do a two-word review of social media sites. I still like that idea.
Oh, yeah, I'm down.
I still like that idea. That's funny.
That's good. Anyway, this has been the two-word review podcast. We have been talking about many things, but the core of it was The Shawshank Redemption. If you would like to continue to listen, please do so. We are available on all streaming platforms, audio streaming platforms. And follow us on Instagram at the two word review, or at two word review. And then, yeah, we'll talk to you guys next week. There will not be a month-long hiatus, hopefully, if our budget does not get removed again. Let's hope that does not happen.
We learned our lesson.
We said Flubberbutt zero times this time.
Actually, I said it once.
Twice now. But it was out of an apologetic spirit.
But on a closing note, I just have to say, how dare they be okay with The Shawshank Redemption, which shows real fleshy butts, and they're not okay with the green translucent butt. That's all I'm saying. Closing remarks.
It's discrimination.
All right. We don't need to red pill the industry. We know that there's problems.
We certainly do. And with that, we will bid you all farewell and talk to you next time.